the show.
Well, hey everyone, welcome to this week's show. This is your host, Lisa Anderson. Happy Valentine's Day, heading into Valentine's Day weekend for all of you. You know I love Valentine's Day, so you know I'm going to mention it. But you know what I love even more? Pursuit 2015. Coming up this summer in July, it is time to register. Our early bird registration, $199, only goes through the end of March, so you better get clicking on your computer and get signed up. Right, Anthony?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, later on in the show, oh my goodness, like this isn't appropriate to Valentine's Day. A question of someone needing help for binge eating. So I don't know. Our counselor, one of our counselors, Deanna, is going to be in here to answer that question. I can't wait to hear her response for that. And then for our culture segment, author and worship leader Kate Hurley, she's the author of Cupid is a Procrastinator, is going to talk to us about her experience as a singleton and all the things that she has wrestled through there. So also a great time with good insight. And here we are for our roundtable. I've got Anthony, Aaron, and Roger in here. Hey.
Hey.
Hey, Lisa.
Okay, I have my Bible sitting in front of me because we're going to get spiritual for this roundtable.
It's about
time. We're going to talk about It's okay. Not often that when I host a show, we go there. So, no, but we are today because, again, alluding to this whole concept of love, a fresh take on it. Why don't we take a biblical perspective on it, hey? Specifically honing in on the concept of love being patient. Okay, so we know that that is in 1 Corinthians 13. We know that it is basically in Jesus' entire life. We know that it's reflected throughout other scriptures. In fact, I'm currently studying James and was just talking about and reading about wisdom and all the things that wisdom is, and it's none of the things I had hoped it would be that I'm good at. Instead, it's things like being long-suffering and being pure and being serving and submissive and all this stuff. So, wow. If we want to be wise, why don't we just focus on those kinds of things? So I want to just kick it off by asking, when you hear the phrase love is patient, what does that mean to you? Do you feel like that's something like, okay, how do I apply that? What does that look like? And has it changed over the years?
That's a hard question.
I could tell you what it means to me.
All right.
Well, you know, love is patient. The initial thing that comes to my mind is if love is patient, it doesn't say patience is love. And so the immediate thought for me is, then how do we really define love? How is that expressed? And of course, a byproduct of that love being expressed is we should see patience. Mm-hmm. And so I have my own definition of love, but I think in having been married now almost 38 years, there have been wonderful opportunities to not only be patient, but certainly the opportunities of having my wife have to be patient with me. Mm-hmm. And those she could better speak to than I can. But
Okay, good.
The first thing that popped in my head in response to love is patient is really the idea that I believe that if you're approaching people with love, you allow them to learn things at their own speed, and to like if you're aware that someone is making mistakes, that I mean, you might speak forcefully into that, but you can't force them to change. And so really, like, I guess this is like one concrete example. It's not like the full picture of what love is patient means, but the way that I've recently seen it play out in like family relationships and as a dad, it's simply respecting people on their journey, which is not like, again, it's not enabling sin or error or whatever, but it's realizing that you can't control people, and it's not loving to try to do that. Mm-hmm. So, encouraging, being there with them, speaking truth into their lives, but not trying to control them. Mm-hmm. That's one way I've seen it play out recently.
That's good, because I think piggybacking on that, the way I see it is that idea of letting them know that you're going to be with them through the long haul, too. I think so many people feel like you're only going to stick it out so long, and then you're going to run for the hills. If I cross this line, if I irritate you, if I disappoint you, if I you know, there's not a permanency to that, yeah. whether it's in a friendship or even in a marriage. I mean, we've seen mm-hmm. that happen. So mm-hmm. that's good. Sure. Good point.
Yeah, I guess my response would be similar to Anthony's, and just there are some other words that I think of when you say love is patient. One of them would be understanding, trying to be understanding of people when they have different opinions, different ways of doing things, realizing that my way of doing things is not always right, even if I think it is. And then, yeah, just being respectful, again, of differing opinions, thoughts, feelings, and trying to live that out, you know, just understanding that I need to be patient when people don't always do things the way I would like or see things the way I see them.
Mm-hmm. How have you guys been able to practically apply this or have it applied to you?
I think there's that, at least for me, it's recognizing that people, in terms of application for me, mm-hmm. Having been married as long as I have and having grown kids and grandkids, that exercising of patience is really a byproduct for me of recognizing that we're all a work in progress. Mm-hmm. We're at different places. You know, I look at the length of time that I've been a believer, and then I look at the length of time that my kids have been believers, or my grandkids. Depending on where you are in that process, your responses to life are going to be so different. And you know, at my age, to be able to recognize the fact that they are a work in progress, God is working His purpose and His plan in through their lives. It becomes incumbent upon myself to stop and not play Holy Spirit in somebody else's life, mm-hmm. and try to, much like he said, to force that issue of, hey, if you can only be like me, if you can only think like me, you know, then we would both really be happy. And the reality is, we're at different places in our lives. Mm-hmm. So learning to rest in the fact that this is where God has me, this is where God has them, mm-hmm. and allow them to be led by the Holy Spirit, to be changed by the Holy Spirit at a different pace maybe, or at a different place than I am, mm-hmm. And being able to rest in that and just accept the fact that this is who they are, this is where they're at. Mm-hmm. That's... Mm-hmm. a practical thing for me anyway. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, I'm not married, but I'm the oldest of four, and I have two roommates, and I, you know, I help out with the high school youth group at my church, and sometimes it's really hard to be patient mm-hmm. with those kids. But just like Roger said, knowing that everybody's at different stages, not only in their walk with the Lord, but just in their maturity as a person. And so, you know, sometimes my roommates leave dishes in the sink, and so that's a great opportunity to be patient with them and mm-hmm. Not get uptight about a few dishes or, you know, some things laying around the house, or even my younger siblings who I love and they're responsible adults and have kids of their own. But again, just being patient with them and the decisions they make, lots of opportunities there.
Mm-hmm. I definitely have the opportunity to practice it with my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, they're both toddlers now, and well, a toddler and a kid, but anyways, yeah, so I think one concrete example of that is, you know, oftentimes kids will just get in moods for whatever reason. They feel insecure or like their control of their lives is, you know, weakening, and so oftentimes kids will refuse good things mm-hmm. because they have to act out. It's like, I mean, like something like, you know, what, like, you don't want this ice cream? No, I'm in a bad mood. I'm going to go hide in the corner or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I kind of grew up in an environment where you had to like immediately comply or immediately submit because of external forces versus like just kind of being given the chance to like process things and come to my own conclusions about them. Mm-hmm. And so with my kids, I try to be patient instead of trying to control their behavior and immediately make that the way that I want it to be, really like speak to their hearts. Mm-hmm. And yeah, again, not like, you know, enable them when they're acting out, always, you know, kind of firm, but yeah, for me, being patient with my kids is allowing them to process their emotions and like have some time to think about the good advice that, you know, we as parents have given them, and then come to their own conclusions. And basically, always they come back, you know, kind of in their own timing, and they're like, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm sorry, Daddy, or yes, I do want to do whatever this
I guess
is.
I do want so, this ice cream.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Seriously. Yeah, it's
why
sometimes
that's even
it's
a decision.
Absurd.
I don't even know.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, mm-hmm. and like it sounds absurd, but you know, adults are the same way. So mm-hmm. it totally translates. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. it's basically honoring people's hearts and not trying to control them.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that comes to mind is when we become impatient, the question becomes why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it my own selfishness that drives that? Is it that I want them to think like I do or be like I am? And that's why when I said earlier, it's not my responsibility to play Holy Spirit in somebody's life. Mm-hmm. But generally, we become impatient because of our own selfishness. Mm-hmm. I want things the way that I want mm-hmm. them. I want my mm-hmm. kids to think like I think. How does a 3-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old think like a 30 or 40 or 50-year-old person? Mm-hmm. So I think for me, that recognition of am I impatient because of me? It's really my mm-hmm. issue. It's my mm-hmm. own selfishness, my own sin, because, hey, I would like it better if it just all went the way that I think it should mm-hmm. go.
Yeah.
And that's not life.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I think a lot of us equate patience with, okay, this really irritates me, so I'm just going to clam up about it and stew about yes. it and act like that. I act like I'm patient mm-hmm. about it. But yeah, really, sure. we're just mad and we harbor like bitterness towards them or something like that. Which, interestingly enough, what is the phrase after love is patient in 1 Corinthians?
Love is kind.
Love is kind.
Love is kind. Mm. So kindness comes into play regardless of where your actions are. It's what is your heart thinking? And yeah. so you can't just say, I'm going to, like as Anthony said, modify my behavior to act like I'm giving them a pass or giving them grace or giving them whatever, when really you're just stewing about what an idiot they are because they're not doing what you want them to do. I mean, anyway.
That's true.
Yeah,
Roger, going back to what you said, I love that because I think for me, like the turning point for me as a parent was realizing that my impatience with my kids and with people in general really was simply the fact that I valued being in control and having stuff go my way more than those people. And so you could basically say patience is valuing people over things going the way that you want.
Well, you know, Diane and I have spent many years doing marriage and pre-marriage counseling. Or mentoring with couples. And one of the things that we always say to couples is this: are you willing to get to a place where you can say, you are more important to me than I am? Hmm. See, if you have that mentality as it relates to your children, as it relates to a spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend, to say, you are more important to me than I am, then the chances are, statistically, you're going to be far more patient mm-hmm. because you recognize it's not about you. Mm. It's about them and their development and what God's doing in their life and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. that's kind of one of those one-liners that we use, but it's a solid reminder to say, hey, this isn't just about me. Mm-hmm. And when I make it about me, that's when I become impatient.
Yeah, good point. So looking at this through a different lens, because obviously when we think love is patient, we think of those people around us, whether they're spouses or boyfriends, girlfriends, family members, whatever. What about our patience in light of the love of God mm-hmm. itself? I mean, I think for a lot of us, you know, it's easy, especially for singles around Valentine's Day, to be like, well, it's obvious that God doesn't care about me, or God doesn't care about my story, or he hasn't operated on my timeline. And I'm sure married people have this too, whether it's, you know, something you expected to happen in your life or you expected from your spouse and that hasn't changed. And God, why don't you give this to me? Why haven't you done this? Why haven't you shown up? How do you guys live out patience with the timeline and the plans and the heart of God, knowing that he is completely good and we mm-hmm. still can't even trust him in that? Ba-bam.
Well, sometimes I don't live it out very well, yeah, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times...
You're not alone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm in the same boat you are, Lisa. I'm patiently, sometimes not patiently, waiting for God to bring my spouse along and still hoping that that is in my future, but you know, I'm not guaranteed that. And so what does it look like to be patient and wait for something that I'm not guaranteed, but something that is still a desire of my heart, mm-hmm. and then trusting, like you said, that his timing is perfect, that he is good whether he brings a spouse or not. And yeah, sometimes I do it well and sometimes I don't, and mm-hmm. there are seasons when it's harder than others, and in those moments when it's hard and I don't have the patience and the trust, you know, I just fall back to his word and remembering and looking back on the past in situations that I've been in when he has always been faithful. And those are the moments when it usually helps me then be more patient and trusting his plan.
Yeah. I think for me, a way of walking out patient, you know, being patient with God's timing is simply constantly reminding myself, preaching to myself the truth of his goodness. And a great way of developing patience with his timing is reading scripture. The whole arc of scripture is a story of perfect timing. God's plan is awesome, and his timing is always right. And yeah, like the more that you kind of ground yourself in his story, or the more that you take the biblical story and make it your story, the easier it is to wait on him. And also kind of the other way around is, like, I'm constantly grateful for how patient he is with me. There have been so many times where I've struggled for so long when I didn't have to or whatever, and then afterwards I just look back and realize how gentle and kind and patient he is. So he definitely demonstrates that toward us.
I think that patience and kindness that we have, or the patience that we have with God, is is vital for me, because I'm obviously I'm the old guy in the room, but
we prefer to say mature.
Okay, I'm the mature person in the room, but and probably have been in terms of when I got saved longer than probably most of you have been alive. What's interesting about that is you not only recognize God's goodness, you recognize how he's worked in your life and how giving and loving and benevolent he is and his patience expressed towards you. But the longer I've lived, the more I recognize that it's not just his kindness and his goodness. What it comes down to for me is the very fact that he is God. He is sovereign. He is working a purpose in and through my life, even in this waiting process, like yourself, of having a desire to be married, and but having to wait on the Lord. And if he wasn't as patient with us, or we weren't even as patient with him, and we rushed, we put the cart before the horse, you know, how disastrous that potentially could be, because we operate then on our choices and what we want in our flesh versus what he knows is best and what he has is best for us if we're just willing to trust him. And so a lot of times our impatience with God, it becomes our impatience becomes a byproduct of our lack of trust. And a lack of trust really becomes a byproduct of really not understanding who he is. And so it's wonderful to be able to wait on him, etc.
That's good because it's so funny, as you were talking, Roger, it made me think just this weekend, in fact last night, I was doing the final edits on my book manuscript, which, if the Lord tarries, should come out this summer, we'll see. But it's so funny because combing through my manuscript, that's one of the things I landed on near the end of the book, was I seem to have this impression that, first of all, either God is just wringing his hands over why I'm still single, like he can't figure it out and he's trying to come up with a good plan B for me because whatever he had initially didn't work, or that he's just he's setting out to make my story completely difficult. Like, I'm going to run this gauntlet that's, like, so crazy and just fraught with, like, beasts and monsters, and it's all, like, crazy. But Scripture says, what's that verse about he set the lines in pleasant places for us? Yes. And how whatever my story is, it's entirely what he has crafted. He's not having me jump over obstacles and trying to, you know, we know that he doesn't tempt us. We know that he's not trying to trip me up. And so can I look at my story and wait for it to unfold in his timing? I think that's something that's huge, you know, and hard to get my mind around.
You know, what's difficult with some of that is this, and it was just reiterated for me a couple weeks ago listening to a sermon at church. And I was reminded at all the things in our life, whether it be our job, whether it be a book, whether it be a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a husband, children, you name it, the gifts that God's given us. All these things are designed to ultimately bring glory back to him. And because that's his desire, he's using all those things. We have to be willing to wait on him to bring about his perfect purpose at his perfect timing, because it reflects his glory instead of our own. So it has nothing to do with what I want. It has everything to do with what he wants, and that is to be glorified in the process.
Yeah.
But it's hard to wait on that.
Oh, it is. Well, good thoughts, you guys. Thanks much for sharing from your own experience on this. And we do know that love is patient. Love is kind. It's, you know, it doesn't say love tries to be patient or love is usually patient or whatever. So with God's help, that can be a manifest, I think, in our own lives. So thanks for sharing.
Thanks.
My pleasure.
You don't have to say a word, love. Being close to you is all I want. Rest here in my lawn. Till it's enough for you. Be still and know. Quiet your soul. Love. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart.
Well, hey, everyone. We have got this week's culture segment, and I get to introduce you today to Kate Hurley. Hey, Kate.
Hi.
Great to have you here on The Boundless Show.
Oh, I'm honored to be here.
Yeah, good to have you. For those of you who aren't familiar with Kate, Kate is actually a worship leader and singer-songwriter out of Boulder, Colorado. So our own a native, you know, from our state here in Colorado. She is the author of the book Cupid is a Procrastinator, which we're going to talk about today. But she also blogs at thesexycelibate.com. I know you all are jumping over to that URL right now. And of course, you can hear more about what she has going on in general at Kate Hurley, and that's HURLEY.com. So, but we're going to, this is fun because she's a fellow singleton. You're what? You're in your 30s now, right?
Yes.
Awesome.
Late 30s.
Okay. Well, late 30s.
I'll admit that much.
All right. Awesome. And really a lot of this book is very much what we're really God has taught you and how he's brought you through ups and downs of wrestling with your current story and what that's looked like. And so so I want to start out, because just the book is a very fun read, and I want to start out by just asking you, one of the stories you tell is, or you make a passing comment at least, about being in 33 weddings, which I think is high for anyone's standard. I mean, I'm like, I feel like I have been in a few, and I've certainly attended many. Were you like the subject of, you know, who was it? What's the movie?
Oh, 27 Dresses.
27 Dresses. It's like, that's your story. Oh, my word. But 33 dresses.
Yes.
So that's,
well,
that's
awesome. I should have mentioned this in the book, but a lot of those weddings were me playing music. So I wasn't surprised me at every one of those.
Okay.
And if you add it up, I've been going to weddings for probably 15 years. So that's like 2 a year, so that's easily, I think I've gone past 33 now.
Oh, that's
over
awesome.
Over the years, it just adds up pretty fast, you
yeah
know?
Yeah, no, that's for sure. I understand that. So, and that's, you know, I mean, again, this is something, and this is kind of my story too, where it's not like you set out at the age of 10 or 15 years old to be single in your 30s. That's just the way that it's played out. So tell us a little bit about what, well, in fact, I want to back up a little bit, because you talk, there's a lot of, actually, your and my stories that parallel, which is really fascinating.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I, in my late 20s, got a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis. And you talk about a Lyme disease diagnosis that you received that had initially gone untreated. And you walk through that a little bit in the book. And I want you to tell our folks, because that's kind of a, you know, in addition to other things you're wrestling with, that's a little bit of a difficult pill to swallow. And how... Can you talk to us a little bit, Kate, about how that magnified your feelings of being alone, but also kind of gave you a better understanding of God's care for you in the midst of that?
Yeah, so just briefly, I mean, it's such a long story, but I had Lyme disease for 7 years, almost to the day that, from the day I got bit, to the day they said I didn't have it anymore. And I got very, very sick. I mean, you know, gradually worse and worse and worse, to the point that I wouldn't sleep for weeks at a time. I mean, I could go 5 nights without sleeping day or night. And for a few months in there, I was bedridden. I was losing so much weight. I had sores all over my face and in my mouth. And my friends were having to bring me meals. And my best friend told me she, you know, used to cry because she thought I was going to die. I mean, I was so sick. And I have this stark memory of going to a doctor who, you know, was not very careful with his words and basically said, if you ever have kids, you might give them Lyme disease. If you ever have a husband, you're going to get worse the rest of your life. You could go crazy. I mean, just all these really bad, you know, words that he was not being careful with. And I just came home, and I still remember my coat was on and my purse was on, and I was standing in my living room, and I just couldn't even get the energy to take my coat off. And I just thought, oh my gosh, I don't have the energy to do anything, but I have to try to get better. And I just remember thinking, I wish I had a partner to help me with this right now, just so that he could do some of the work, because I'm too tired to figure out how to get better, you know? But at the same time, like, even though I really wanted that, I just still saw my community come together to really help me. And of course, you know, just God's gentle goodness surrounding me during that time is something, you know, that a husband could never give me. You know, God gave me in a different way than a husband would have. But it was very hard to walk without a partner. I just wanted somebody to help me so much and to hold me and tell me everything was going to be okay, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit, Kate, about your vision of marriage when you were younger, say, you know, college years, high school, college, you know, when, of course, I talk to a lot of young girls, and many listen here, who think, you know, that this is going to be a very easy transition into being a wife and a mother, and, you know, it's just going to happen. You know, and then when reality sets in, you know, sometimes we realize, oh, maybe my timeline isn't quite God's. What were your initial expectations of marriage, and how, you know, is being single in your 30s different than your 20s? How have those evolved through the years?
Yeah, you know, I just read something the other day, and I just thought this was so powerful. And it said, love is not something that happens to you. Love is something that is forged. And I think that's kind of how it's changed for me. Like, I used to, you know, a bunch of my friends got married super young, 22, and all of us just had these dreams of marriage, and, you know, and, like, you fall into it. It's like you're tripped, and you just fall into it, and there's no work involved. You know, it's just something that happens to you, you know. And over the years, you know, some of my very closest friends are married, and it has become so evident to me that that's just not what love is about. You know, love is forging something, and if you expect it to be something that just happens to you, you're going to be disappointed. But if you see it as something that you have a part in, and something that's hard but something that's beautiful, it's just such a different perspective, you know. And I think that's my perspective on marriage now. But I still want it, but I don't picture it as this thing that's just going to make everything better. I see it as something that is going to take a lot of work, but work that I want to do if God has that for me, you know.
Yeah. And what about the practicalities of being single? I mean, are there things that you've learned, say, over the past 10 years that you kind of have, you would say, more experience in or wisdom in, or kind of a clearer picture of what being single looks like that maybe you didn't really understand as a younger single?
Yeah, I think, I mean, as much as I get frustrated with people being like, oh, you have so much freedom and all this stuff, I mean, the truth is I have really made a beautiful life for myself, even though it is very different than I expected it to be, you know. And so I think if you were to tell me I was going to be single into my late 30s, I'd be like, no, that's horrible, you know. I'm going to be alone in my apartment, just like knitting or something. But instead, I mean, I think that I am seeing, like, that I do have a really successful, beautiful life, and I do things that I could never do married. But I hate it when people tell me that, so sometimes I just want to be like, oh, whatever. But yeah, so I do think that it looks a lot different than I would have thought. If you were to tell me I was going to be single, I would have thought it was much lonelier probably than it actually has been, because I've made it that way, you know.
Sure. Yeah. Now, well, let's talk a little bit about the, you know, still having a vision for marriage and a hope for it. And in fact, the pursuit of marriage. One thing that I'm often asked by married people, and they're very well-meaning, is kind of this idea of, well, we don't really understand why you're still single. So are you sure you're really putting yourself out there? You know, like I'm just holding myself up in my place every night and unwilling to interact with the world. what do you, I mean, have you wrestled with that over the years of just being like, I don't know, am I putting myself out there? Do I meet people? Where am I going to meet someone or whatever? And how, you know, that tension between the unrest of am I doing, quote, enough and really trusting God with the process, how have you, you know, been able to develop some kind of, or even have you, a gracious response for that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, in general for that question, I mean, I really do put myself out there. I mean, I fall for people a lot, so I guess okay. I kind of put myself out there. But
that's kind of dating. But yeah, I mean, at least in your head, that's dating.
Yeah, I mean, well, I definitely have close guy friends that I consider dating, you know, so I don't, like, ignore males or, and I went through a season where I did online dating, but it was really hard for me. I mean, and I do get married people saying, oh, just online dates. So many people get married that way. And I'm like, I've tried and I will keep trying. But I think that something I talk about in the book is that when married people, well-meaning married people say things that are super trite and cliche like that, oh, like just put yourself out there. Or if you just let go, then your husband will come. Mm-hmm. That is really damaging to single people. And I know they're just trying to help and that they're loving, you know, but the thing that's really hard about those kind of cliche things is that it makes the single person feel like they're doing something wrong and that's why they're not married, you know? And that is that's just so hurtful to us because we're trying so hard and we don't want to feel like, well, we haven't let go. We haven't put ourselves out there enough and that's why. So it puts all this weight on us, like it's your fault that you're single. Mm-hmm. And that is just not good for us. I mean, we already are struggling with a lot of bad emotions, you know? And so I just, you know, if a married person were to say that to me, I'd probably say, oh, you know, like, maybe just listen to my story a little bit. Or, like, sometimes answers like that can make me feel like I did something wrong. I'd rather you just listen to what I have to say, you know? Mm-hmm. Listen to my journey, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always really hard to know what to do with those comments. Because you know they just love you and they want to answer just as much as you do, but it's just, you just feel like, oh, I don't want to be blamed for my singleness, you know?
Yeah. Oh, so, no, exactly. Well, speaking of, you know, blaming for your singleness, one of the reasons that you are most likely still single, and my mom would certainly agree with this, is that you watch too much of The Bachelor. So, but you do make that admission in the book and, I think it's awesome how, when you tell the story, you're like, you know, you wish you had more, you know, a higher brow type pursuit to talk about, or that, you know, you're always trying to be this more self-actualized person. And I've totally been in that boat as well. And all these people that are like, oh yeah, so I was reading the Puritans and I was, you know, whatever. And, and I'm like, really? I was reading People magazine. So that's kind of where I devolve to. But let's talk about that a little bit and just how, you know, you illustrate a little bit through the book how that kind of, you know, feeds your desire for approval from others in the sense of, you know, wanting to be about big things and good things and deep things. Where did all that come from?
Yeah, you know, the whole book started from that chapter. And I just was having a conversation with somebody and I said, you know, my last boyfriend knew everything about me, all my deep, dark secrets and all the stuff from my childhood, all that stuff. I never once told him that I watched The Bachelor because I knew he would look at me differently and think that I was shallow. And so so that chapter is basically about how, like, I work with homeless people and I work with refugees and I, you know, go on to monasteries and study the word and, you know, I read Henry Now and all these deep, you know, but there's this other side to me that watches The Bachelor, and I want to hide that from people, and I want to hide my weakness from men. And, of course, it was just kind of a joke, a little bit of a joke, but there's other things about me where I just I don't want people to see certain sides of me. I struggle with sadness a lot and depression and things like that. And that's the stuff that's the hardest for me, because I'm afraid that if a man were to see that side of me, they wouldn't want to be with me, because that part of me is hard. Mm-hmm. And so that chapter is basically about, like, I need to love myself even in my weakness. Mm-hmm. And I need to learn to love others even in their weakness. And the more I learn to love myself in my weakness when I'm single, the more I'll be able to do that with my husband when, if I marry somebody, that I'll be able to accept even his weak parts if I'm able to accept my weak parts too. So
yeah,
that's basically what that chapter was about. But I do want to say that I broke my exact first, and I haven't watched it for like 3 seasons. So
oh wow, okay. Well, are you on to something?
But I do watch Down Abbey, which is probably just as bad. But
no, I think that's just so much, you know, classier, because at least they wear period costumes, so you're good.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Well, it's funny because what you're saying is so true, in the sense of I have a hard time believing, you know, I think that it's like this objective checklist of like, here's what about, you know, the things about me that are good that are going to be on the positive tally list. And here are the things that are bad that are going to detract. And I totally lose sight of the fact that God can take some, you know, godly guy and he can love me. I mean, God can put a love in his heart for me, you know, so it's not this striving of, am I putting on a good enough front, or am I amazing enough or smart enough or connected enough or serving enough and all this kind of stuff. You know, you have to love, just like you said at the front end of the interview, you have to love a person in their entirety. They're not a hypothetical. They're not some kind of caricature of someone. So I think that's a good mindset that we have to be in, you know. Otherwise, we can it can be crazy making to wonder if we're enough ever. I mean, yeah.
Right. And I think that one of the, I talk about this in the book too, but that in every dating couple's relationship, there's a thing called the when you're first dating, you project your perfect person onto that person. Mm-hmm. And then you also project your best self onto that person. Mm-hmm. And then in every couple's life, there's a season that happens where those projections are taken down, what I call the removal of the projections.
Sure.
And that's when you see the person for who they are, and that's when your, like, not great self comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get through that and still love each other, it feels so much safer to marry somebody after you've been through that, because you know that they're accepting you for who you are.
Yeah.
So that's a really important part of growth in a couple's relationship, is to accept the weakness that somebody else has and to see them accepting you and your weakness too.
Right. Yeah. Well, you do have a section in the book where you kind of dismantle some of the premises of the book I Kissed Dating Goodbye, which, you know, no diss on Josh Harris. You know, I mean, he's a good guy. He's got a lot going on. I think he would even say, you know, well, this worked for me, but I can't offer any guarantees. You know, and of course, putting out a courtship model and all that. And it's funny because we'll talk to guys here at Boundless who are like, yeah, that message really messed me up, because I just ended up reading a bunch of books and looking at formulas and I never actually like pursued anyone. So what for you kind of rang so true about, you know, recognizing that as kind of a 90s formula that didn't ultimately work for everyone? And how do we translate good principles into dating today so that we can truly do it, you know, with some sense of normalcy without caving to the world?
Yeah. And I do think that there were some good things that came out of that book. I don't want to diss on you, just like you're saying, and especially it's good for teenagers, I think, and maybe in people in their young 20s. But I think the thing that and like kind of got people thinking about like casual dating and just dating all over the place and not really putting very much effort or thought into it, and not, you know, like, and I do think that can be destructive. But I think that the thing that did do was that it went to the other extreme and it said, you know, you only should marry somebody that you're almost sure you're going to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, the reason I think that dating can be used as a tool to slowly figure out whether that person is a good match for you or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not a big fan of like casually dating necessarily, but I am a big fan dating slowly, you know, where you're really, really taking into consideration, is this person a good match for me? And if not, like, being able to gracefully, you know, break up and not feel like you're a horrible person because you didn't marry somebody you dated, you know, it's more just like you've got enough information to realize this isn't the best idea, you know?
Right.
And, yeah, and so, I mean, I've talked to a lot of guys who have told me, oh my gosh, that whole culture has made it so hard for me to ask girls out because I feel like if I ask her out, you know, there's all this pressure of like, oh my gosh, are we going to get married? It's like, we barely know each other. Like, and so he doesn't even want to ask the girl out at all because he's worried because he doesn't know if he wants to marry her yet. And the thing is, you don't have enough information to know if you want to marry, if you should get married yet, you know?
Right.
So like I said, I'm not a big fan of super casual dating, but I am a fan of slow dating.
Right. Well, and that's why I think, you know, if you...
Non-pressure.
Right. I mean, going after women that you think could be potential matches because you've heard some good things or you've seen good things, you know, I mean, we want to be about people who are actually like pursuing God. But like you said, you know,
definitely.
Making it a deliberate process where you have a game plan, you're asking the right questions. I mean, I think it's so funny because everyone either gets into this hyper like, okay, I'm going to make sure I can marry her before I ask her out. Or they go the opposite extreme of just, you know, maybe after 4 years of hikes and pizza dates, I'm going to see where this, you know, and meanwhile, people are just going crazy and aging. So,
yeah, aging, right.
So I totally, you know, aging in front of our very eyes. So, no, I totally.
Right, oh, yes.
Totally hear you on that, Kate. Well, this has been a fun conversation. Obviously, there's so much more in the book, folks. It is called Cupid is a Procrastinator. I've been talking to Kate Hurley. Find out more about her at katehurley.com. Just a really, really fun exchange here, Kate. And thanks for speaking up on behalf of those of us who are single and really just thriving in the season that we're in while still remaining hopeful for marriage, because I think that can be a delicate balance. But it's one that many of us are called to. So thanks for doing that with grace.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I will pour the rivers out on the thirsty land. Water on the dry ground. The orphan child will come home again. The hungry will be fed now. The hungry.
Well, we are going to head into our inbox, and we have Counselor Deanna with us. Hey, Deanna.
Hi.
Very pleased to have you with us. This is a question that's probably no surprise to many, especially the women in our listening audience. Our listener says, I know my body is the temple of God, but I still have problems binge eating. I pray that God will help me with this food disorder, but I'm still stuck in sin. What can I do?
Well, first, I just want to validate this is a problem that a lot of women struggle with. And it's very difficult addiction because if you know, if you're addicted to other things like drugs, then you just don't do it and then you're better. But it's hard with food because you have to figure out where is it that I'm supposed to be? What is it I'm supposed to be eating? And how can I do that and glorify God? In 1 Corinthians 10:31, it talks about whatever you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. And I think it's really important as you are eating and just any other things that you're doing with your body, that you're doing it for the glory of God. And I think really paying attention to when you are hungry and when you are not. I do have some resources to recommend as well. On the Focus on the Family broadcast, there was a broadcast called Radical Motivation for Losing Weight. And This is by Dr. Nick, and he wrote a book as well as did the broadcast online, and that's a good thing to work through. There's also a website that's called findingbalance.com, and it's a Christian website that talks about where do you find the balance between, you know, having your body as a temple and eating, and how, you know, even how you look at yourself and your self-esteem and your body image and those kind of things. And it can really help to, you know, sort of have someone else to talk to and, you know, just lean on them through this process. I think a lot of people have sort of been raised this way, or they've done it so long that it's a natural thing to them. And you sort of don't even know when you're hungry anymore. You just eat because it's there, because everyone else is doing it, because you feel like you're supposed to, because it's that time of day. So I think you sort of have to step back and figure out when you're hungry and when you're not hungry. And some of the things to help with that, a lot of times when you eat, you'll go, and that means that you're full. So that's sort of your body giving you a sign that you need to stop. So I think, you know, one way to realize that you are getting better, I've noticed that before, when I used to go to eat, all my focus would be on my food and what I was eating. And then when that no longer was an issue for me, my focus was on the conversation and not, I didn't think about the food at all. So I think just really, you know, giving that to God. There's one more resource I just thought of. There's a book called Made to Crave. And it talks about how God has created us to crave Him. And how a lot of times, you know, we spend so much of our time and focus craving food and other things, you know, even relationships and, you know, just kind of helping you to put that center back on God and to just be craving Him and focusing on Him and, you know, just putting all the glory to Him instead of focusing on your food.
Yeah, that's good. You know, and it's interesting. I know you mentioned, you know, focusing on conversation rather than food. And for those of us that are single, sometimes that's hard because we're running and eating something before heading off to Bible study, or we are sitting in front of the TV, which is, you know, everyone says is a bad idea. So I think, too, putting some thought into what are my triggers towards overeating? Am I doing it mindlessly? Am I doing it because I'm exhausted from the day, or I'm bored out of my mind, or or I'm grieving some kind of, you know, a relationship issue or whatever. I think putting some good thought to that is helpful as well, and just owning it. You know, and saying, yeah, this probably isn't eating out of need to eat and stuff. And so I think that, you know, you mentioning that kind of awareness was really helpful as well. So, but great resource recommendations. Thanks so much, Deanna.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Okay, folks. Well, that is it. Do check out some of these resources because they are good. We're glad when we can be aware of them. Of course, we hear about great new resources here at Focus on the Family all the time. So, and do share them with people that could be benefited from them as well. So we will see you around next week. That's it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org. Focus on the Family.